You're listening to Sci-Fi for Chicks on Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
You hired a man to kill Alfred.
I hired your guardian's comrade to find out what you knew. I never intended harm to come to anyone. I told the board you were a special case, that you'd need the talk early.
The talk?
Bruce, when members of the Wayne family reach a certain age, some facts of life and business are explained.
Wayne Enterprises is committing serious crimes.
Oh, my, yes. This is a multinational corporation operating in hundreds of jurisdictions. We do our best to subvert all of them if it means profits.
So you admit it?
Just like your father. He came in with his secret files demanding justice at first. Then he changed his mind.
You're lying.
Your father came to understand the reality of this business, as did his father, and as will you.
My father was a good man.
You have an opportunity to live a blessed life. The life your father and mother wanted for you. I beg you to reconsider. Don't forget your cookie.
Welcome to Sci-Fi for Chicks. My name is Heather, and I am joined by my podcasting partner in crime, Alex. Hey, Alex.
Hello, everybody.
That is more enthusiasm in that hello than I heard in all of our pre-talk. So this is either going to be a really short episode or a really long rambling one, because I have a feeling, Alex is not that excited about this episode of Gotham.
Come on, let's be honest here. My enthusiasm regarding this show has been slipping little by little with each episode that we got after it came back from the break. And the major storyline, Milo Hess, has been one of the reasons for it, among other reasons that I have. I tried for an excited hello because I'm excited that people are still listening to us ramble. but that's it. Don't get used to it. And I'm all tapped out of enthusiasm after this hello. So
we are excited that you have tuned in, that you've downloaded, you're listening. However you are checking us out, we would love for you to go over to iTunes and subscribe to us, Sci-Fi for Chicks. You can also check us out on the podcast platform of your choice. You can just listen to us in your browser on scififorme.com, but come on, hey, then you might miss out on our iZombie podcast, our Orphan Black podcast, some of the other stuff.
Now those are excited.
Yeah, you don't want to miss out those. So make sure and subscribe to us so you can check it out. And of course, also go over to Twitter and follow us there at Sci-Fi for Chicks. We'd love to hear what you think after you have made it through our episodes here of Gotham. This was a show that I think we were both intrigued at the beginning, and I think between the storylines and the timing, which go back, what was it, two podcasts ago, Alex, when I had my rant about the scheduling, I think that's why a lot of our enthusiasm is dying, is because of the scheduling. And in this episode, it has some of the writing things. We're going to be talking today about Gotham Season 1, Episode 21, The Anvil or the Hammer, or as I'm calling it, The Facts of Life. Alex, of course, has no idea what that means because...
But I'm okay with it.
Because she said she was under communism when George Clooney and Tootie and all of them were skating around.
I'm fairly sure that I wasn't even born then, but let's go with it. Let's go with the communism reason.
That is one of those things, though, that lives in repeats, and it is glorious in its cheesy 80-ness. Like I said, with Tootie and Blair and Joe and George Clooney with the hair. It's definitely worth a fun checkout on things. I'm sure it's like on TV Land and various other things. But as soon as in the episode they said The Facts of Life, I started hearing the theme song. It just made me laugh. And so I was like, okay, well, that's the title then, because it's something that made me laugh in this episode. And, you know, I've got to say, I'm not super disappointed in this episode. I have some things I really did like, but some of the things were definitely overshadowed by things I didn't like so much. And with this being the penultimate episode, we only have one more. Next week is the season finale. It just didn't feel like they're building to a season finale to me.
who knows, you know, season finale might surprise us. You can hear how much faith I have in that statement. But hey, it's possible.
This one I could have actually seen as a season finale. I really could. We've seen that a few times throughout this season, episodes that this could have been the season finale. This could have been, not with like a big bang and cliffhanger and all that, but I think it had some elements. So I'm hoping the last episode is just really stellar. Episode 22, All Happy Families Are Alike. Because it to be pretty much a standalone episode after an arc here that we've completed, we'll talk about that when we get to it, I just don't know how they're going to end this. And again, I'm thinking that those extra episodes they got might not have been such a good idea.
Spoiler, you know, surprisingly, there was no fish in this episode, which means next week's episode is the only moment we will get with her. That said, you know, how long does it take to fly a chopper from an island to mainland? Come on.
Depends on where the island is. Like, at one point, it looked like it was in Switzerland. So, you know, go from Switzerland, across Europe, the Atlantic Ocean.
If we spend 3 minutes with Barbara's parents in a throwaway scene in the middle of the season, it feels like we could have gotten, you know, 3 minutes of fish getting patched up.
Bit new. Something. Yeah. Let's go ahead and get into the episode and start with somebody that we generally have liked and have been impressed with over the season. That would be our Batman of the future, little Bruce Wayne, who I think he's grown. He seems taller than he did at the beginning of the season.
He does. And I'm glad it's not just me who notices this stuff.
Like, either you're standing up that much straighter, or you are actually growing, and which would make sense for the age he is. But he is turning into quite a young man, and it's actually helping. I think his growth spurts are helping what he's doing on the show.
They are well-timed.
Yeah, and thank way to go. Usually puberty doesn't work out that well when it comes to filming. See Lost with Walt. Oh, I got lost in. But Walt having his growth spurt did not help the storyline whatsoever. This actually seems to help, because it feels like when he's talking with Alfred, he does seem more like a young man in his dealings now, and less like this little kid. So we have him getting a message from Kat, which is the key, and at the same time that Alfred is having to go down to identify Reg's body, and of course thinking, oh, this is just odd what Reg is happening with Reg, which we jump to the end, we have him confessing to Alfred, finally, that what actually happened to Reg, that they were chasing him down, they got this information, Reg said they were going to tell on him, and Kat killed him. So not to the Wayne Enterprises stuff yet, but what did you think of all of that, the Bruce and Wayne, Bruce and Alfred interactions?
At first, I truly believed that Bruce would keep what happened with Reg to himself, and that it would be a secret for much, much longer than it actually ended up being a secret. So at first I was surprised, but then I realized that I actually really liked that little reveal, because we already established that Bruce and Alfred are really, really close, and they depend on each other for various things. And I realized that keeping that a secret, because in the grand scheme of things, it's a really tiny secret. But for them, and for Bruce in particular, in where he is in his life right now, it's a huge freaking deal.
Right.
So, at first I was surprised, yes. But then I realized, yes, this is how it should go, and let's see what happens. And I was glad that things didn't fall apart miserably, horribly.
Yes.
They tend to do on this show. So, yay! Plus, yeah, he looks like future Bruce Wayne that we will soon see.
I agree with you on that, because I think it's important, I mean, in a culture of TV and movies and books where people don't share information with the people they need to share, you know, hide it for whatever reason, it's refreshing when a character does share something like that. And when you have somebody like Bruce, who has become so isolated because of his wealth, because of the murder, because of what he knows is going on at Wayne Enterprises, we haven't really seen him have any friends. I mean, that little glimpse in the school thing showed that, yeah, the school chum's not so chummy with him. He needs Alfred. He really does need that. And we know what Bruce and Alfred are like in Batman times. They have to be 100% with each other. So in the beginning, I'm like, come on, you've got to tell him. You've got to tell him this is not something that you need to hide from Alfred. And when he finally did tell him, I loved that, because, I mean, I hardly even wrote down a note about what the reactions were or what was going on, because it was so natural. Alfred understood. And, you know, he was even saying that was a different Reg, you know, and he not making excuses for Bruce or for Reg or anything, but he was able to compartmentalize it and realize that, you know, Bruce didn't do it, but had to make some hard decisions and was sharing with him, and they were becoming that much closer. And it really just made me love their relationship even more than I already do. I just love Bruce and Alfred. I mean, if we had the show concentrating more on them, I'd be much happier. Much happier.
Yeah.
Much happier.
Even though it would be a Batman show without a Batman. Which it still is, in a way. Yeah.
Well, it could be the facts of life. Maybe Alfred would, see, now you've got to go watch the show. Maybe Alfred would kind of become like Charlotte Ray and take care of everything. In the meantime, in between all of this Alfred talking, Bruce gets the key from Kat and decides to go to Mr. Flugelnuffers, whatever his name was.
Bungislow or something.
Thank you. Something like that. So something that sounds like some kind of German coleslaw dish, which coleslaw is. Anyway. So he goes for this tour. I love it, too, how he's getting a tour of Wayne Enterprises. The publicity woman, public relations, is giving Bruce Wayne the tour of Wayne Enterprises, and just kind of shows, I think, what everybody thinks of him there. Cute little boy.
Yeah, like a mascot of the company. That's how it felt. Anyway, and I gotta say, through the entire thing, when he wanders away from his keeper, in a way.
And pulls the alarm.
And then goes on wandering to find the right office. I kept thinking, dude, aren't there any security cameras? Like, seriously, what are you doing? You cannot tell me that there are no security cameras in Wayne Enterprises. Was it just me, or...
Probably.
Yeah, probably, but did you also found the... Here, have a cookie. Slightly creepy.
It was condescending, patronizing, and creepy. All in one. I have to admit that I liked the coleslaw guy.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect Nugent, whatever. Bundeslaw.
Bundeslaw.
I actually liked him because he was a different kind of baddie. The other times we've seen the board, and whatever that woman, I can't remember the woman's name either. This is how much of an impression they make. We don't, not only don't know their actor, the actor's names, we don't know the character's names. She was making it really menacing. And when we saw that shot of the board making the decision with Reg and everything, everybody was very menacing and dark and evil. I liked how this guy played it. And I'm sure a lot of it was how it was written, but the way he played it was just very matter of fact. This is the facts of life. This is how it is. And he's talking to this young kid, and he was menacing in his lack of menace, in his, you know, however we can make the most money, we will subvert every law that we can find if it means more prophet. And he wasn't saying this evil. He wasn't saying this menacing. Just, yeah, that's what we do. That's what this is all about. And I liked that it was just so cold and matter of fact, but he's happy about it. Got this little smile on his face. And as he's telling him, your father, you know, we had to tell your father this and your grandfather this. This is how it goes. They played along. And I really found that an intriguing turn, so that he wasn't this, you just have to do this, young man.
Mm.
Like I said, menacing and his non-menacing.
I think what I liked about it is that, in a way, it felt like Bondeslow, what's his face, didn't turn out to be the villain that Bruce was after.
Right.
Because, in a way, Bruce was trying to, probably in his mind, there was like one person or number of people on the board who were those evil, evil villains, destroying Wayne Enterprises from within for the evil purposes, and everything was evil, evil, evil. And here he's confronted by this businessman who basically doesn't see the world in black and white or even shades of gray. For him, everything's green because everything's about money. And it doesn't matter if what he's doing is right or wrong, as long as there's money in it for him. And I don't think up until that point Bruce ever was faced with a person like that. So I liked the kind of insight that Bruce at this age got into, well, reality.
Yeah, it's not just the good guys and the bad guys. You know, again, we're going to that, the Harry Potter thing. The world's not made up of good people and Death Eaters.
Yeah.
There's this whole gray thing in between. And yeah, it wasn't this, I think you're right. I think Bruce was going, I'm going to confront it. I'm going to find the evil that lurks within Wayne Enterprises. And he's like, what do you mean? It's not evil. It's just the way it is. And it's all of us. It's the entire Wayne Enterprises. This is how we do it. Because we're Wayne Enterprises. We want profit. Don't forget your cookie. And it was just that realization on Bruce's face as his dreams of it just being a bad person or a bad board, or I can just wipe this evil out, and seeing how intrinsic it is. It's just totally in every aspect, every pore of Wayne Enterprises.
Yeah.
It's not going to be this easy fix that he thought it was. I mean, you know, and I like how the guy even said that his father had done that too. We just needed to know how much you knew so that we could have the talk. Because your dad did this too and had all of the pieces of the puzzle and presented us with all of the stuff, and we're like, silly boy.
Yeah.
So it was an interesting take on how Wayne Enterprises is, and sees what we think of as Wayne Enterprises in Batman days, how much of an uphill road Bruce and Alfred have.
But not only Bruce and Alfred, because we cannot finish talking about Bruce's plotline without mentioning Morgan Freeman wannabe in the character of Lucius?
Lucius. Perhaps? Lucius.
Lucius.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, I want to definitely talk about Lucius.
Let me tell you, I keep mentioning how David Mazouz is going to grow up to be Christian Bale, or right now Ben Affleck. And I gotta say, you know, for a guy who grows up to be Morgan Freeman, the actor they cast as Lucius for Gotham, he did okay, even better than okay, because you cannot live up to Morgan Freeman, no matter what you do. But I felt he had a strong enough presence on screen, even in that, you know, tiny, tiny moment that they gave him. I can buy him growing up to be Morgan Freeman. You know, give me a couple more seasons, and I will buy it.
And something that I think you brought up earlier was like, Bruce, come on, there's security cameras. There's got to be. Why are you not even thinking about this? The fact that you thought of that, and Lucius, he calls it right there, because he walks in very ominously into the, you know, like henchman-y type into Coleslaw's office. Mm-hmm. And then it takes him out, and I like how he's like, okay, just, you know, stay stoic. Don't make a move on your face. This, I've got, you know, this deep secret. I know where all the cameras are, so if you just stand like this, everything will be fine. And he tells them, and tells them that your dad was a good guy, but he kept his best self hidden, and then wishes him good luck. I'm like, okay, here's a guy that I think in just that one little scene did make me believe, great, we've got another person on team Bruce. I could tell instantly from just those few sentences, the way the actor portrayed it, the way that it was written, the way David interacted with him, and the looks. I'm like, I buy this, and I really hope that we see the guy's name is Chris Chalk. I really hope we see him next season, whether we're watching, you and I are watching next season, it's up for debate, but I really liked him, and he made a big impression in a very short time.
Like I said, he has the chops to grow up to be Morgan Freeman. I will, if we watch, he will be one of the characters we will be rooting for. So that's one thing for sure.
And I like that he does say, your dad was a good guy. And Alfred says, your dad was a good guy. Even good men have secrets. And it's Alfred and Lucius both seem to be ready to compartmentalize and have that stoic front and really be setting it up for what is going to be coming with Batman. Bruce still isn't, because that scene at the end when he's cutting his dad out of the picture of him and his dad and putting his dad on the board, he's still thinking, I think, very much in that good guys, bad guys. And Alfred and Lucius really need to keep pushing him into that. It's not just all that. It's not all bad. I hope he realizes his dad is just a piece of this puzzle that maybe will help get him some more information.
And it was painful to watch him cut that picture. Like, seriously, there were very few scenes as painful to watch as this was, and for different reasons, because that shows how invested I am in Bruce's storyline, how much I love the character and the actor, that it was such an emotional punch to the gut when they showed Bruce just cutting the picture and cutting his dad out to place on the board. It was like, oh, honey, let me hug you.
I'm really impressed by David, because playing a kid of that age, a lot of times there's not a lot of range that you are given. He's stepping up to the challenge of what I think Bruce at that age needs to be showing us.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. It doesn't matter how long Gotham is going to go on for. I'm pretty sure whatever waits for this kid after Gotham, it's going to be really, really good and really brilliant. Because with the amount of talent he has right now, I cannot imagine that he wouldn't be successful after Gotham ends.
Or even during, because he's not in every scene. So
yeah,
he could do something else right now. And I think he should do it with Carmen.
Yes. Yes, yes, to
really that. Cute, really cute. Canoe, even when she's not in the episode, we still canoe her.
Yeah.
Hashtag canoe.
Yeah. It shows how much we love the two of them.
Yeah. Somebody that I don't know, I kind of want to root for him a little bit, but I also really don't. And he wants us to ship him so bad, but I just don't know that I can. We have Ed. Oh, dear.
Oh, dear.
With the cop in the trunk. Oh, dear.
I feel like this sentence fits our relationship to Ed really well. Every time he's on screen, I didn't know it before. I wanted to say, oh, dear. Now that I have this phrase, I cannot help myself. Every time he's on screen, I go, oh, dear. Because you just know that the creepy puppy is there, and he wants to have the ship going with Miss Kringle. But oh dear.
Yeah, I mean, bringing the body parts in. First off, you're bringing two big rolling trunks straight through the middle of the bullpen with all the cops around. That's kind of ballsy. Yeah. I think Donnie from Orphan Black would be going, you know, don't question our stones. We got stones, because that's stones to be doing that. Either that or just totally stupid. Or both. I don't know.
I'm pretty sure that the cops are just used to Ed doing weird things and saying weird things. That seeing him struggle with those two huge suitcases were just, oh, Ed is being Ed. Nothing new here.
And nobody's helping him. Yeah, you're probably right. It's like, oh, just don't even. Don't get him started. He'll pull out a riddle and I just don't want to hear it. Just don't even
exactly.
Patient, so I'm just not even going to acknowledge that his presence. I love him going back to those forensic sink area, whatever, you know, like for the, I'm guessing in the morgue there. And I had flashes to Elementary with the storyline where they had the stuff that basically just dissolved.
Yes.
Remember the stuff that smelled like nutmeg?
Yeah.
Just, I would love if, like, Miss Kringle, when she walked in, goes, it smells like nutmeg or something like that, you know, like a little. Little nod there, because I'm like, what do you really think you're doing? But he didn't even try to cover it when she comes in. Doesn't try to cover it, doesn't try to do anything, doesn't try to, you know, keep her out, like close the door. I'm like, really? Really? You're just going to let her come in and see, and oh, it was an accidental dental slashing, blah, 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 blah. It was an odd scene.
Yeah, it really was, and I honestly just no longer know where this is going. I have no idea whether or not they want Ed to actually end up with Miss Kringle or not, because I liked his development up till now, but now that he has killed...
Oh dear.
Oh dear, yeah. He's back to his creepy puppy status, minus the interesting, because the interesting already happened. So where can we go from here?
Well, and then you have him with that skull, which, first off, props department, can you dirty the skull up a little bit? Because it looked just like a skull that is on top of the skeleton that doctors have in their offices. It didn't look like it had just come out of this guy. It didn't. It looked plastic. He took a little frustration out there, though, on the poor skull.
I'm pretty sure that he's crushing all the bones so that the body can never, ever be found and nothing, you know, remains.
Yeah. Remains.
I know. Look at me. The puns just keep coming.
I don't know what to think about this. I mean, he even comes up with a plan to do that whole Dear Jane letter for Miss Kringle to hopefully get her to move on to him. Read between the lines. Oh, look, Nygma. Ha, ha, ha. He's so pleased with himself. Ha, 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 ha.
Seriously. For a second there, I thought that this Dear Jane letter would be the one thing that doesn't fit and that it would suggest to Miss Kringle or whoever that, yeah, maybe that not-so-nice officer boyfriend did not just dump her. Maybe something happened, but clearly the show is allowed only one or two detective characters per episode, and that spot was filled already, and it wasn't by Miss Kringle.
I don't know about her. I think, I don't know. Let's just move on, because I think we've said more than enough about
we'll see what happens
Ed and Miss Kringle. I really do. Let's go into somebody else that we really want to talk about. We're going to talk about the whole Jason, Babs, Jim thing. I have a feeling Jim will kind of be more at the end, because we start our episode with, obviously, the morning after that big benefits charity event, and after Babs had seen the S&M room. Which she thought was just an S&M room. Ha ha ha, she'll find out differently very quickly. But she seemed very just nonchalant about the fact that they just had a night of illicit sex with only 1 hour of sleep. And let's have some quiche for breakfast. No, that's okay. I'm moving on. And then he starts doing his usual thing that we saw him do with the other person, getting creepy. All very, and I didn't mention this in that last episode that we talked about him with this, just very Tom Cruise-y. It just, the way he kept pulling her back in and like you can't get out, it just, I'm sorry, I've watched Going Clear recently, so it just seemed very Scientology Tom Cruise-y, the way he was pulling her in. And I went, ew.
Okay. That's a comparison I did not see coming.
It's just, well, you know, Tom Cruise, handsome man, but I just look at him and go, ew, because of stuff like that. And that's kind of vibe I got from Jason Lynn. And sorry for any Tom Cruise fans out there that are listening. If that's the reason that you turn our podcast off, wow, really? That? That's the one that offends you about it? This was odd. I don't know what to think about the character. When he confessed to Barbara that last night I was going to kill you, but I've changed my mind because you're the one. I don't know what to think of that.
Okay. This is, I cannot even believe that those words are about to leave my mouth, but for some reason, I thought that, when they advertised, you know, major story arc for Milo.
Major multi-episode story arc, yes.
Major multi-episode story arc with all the exclamation points that I used in the write-up for the past podcast. I fully expected that brainwashing Barbara, as much as I didn't look forward to it, I fully expected for it to last a little longer. I felt like it was done. Okay, so now Jason has Babs, and oh my god, Jim is trying to fight him before Jason kills Babs. Oh my god, let's do the intense, will he be there in time? And yeah, let's skip over all the unpleasant stuff. Well, first off,
to all of those people out there that thought that the ogre was the Joker, guess not.
Yeah.
Psych.
Joke's on you.
I think we're going back to Cameron Monaghan as being our future Joker. Yeah, when this is something that I was even, okay, major multi-episode story arc. They're really setting him up big and bad. This is going to be through the end of the season. A major multi-episode story arc to me is not three episodes. I mean, that's one episode more than Dr. Crane, one episode more than Gruber.
Yeah.
And you know what I found really upsetting? Is that it ended the exact same way. With me just going, really? That's it? That's the whole thing? The whole buildup? We have this creepy buildup? I mean, all of that stuff he did with her. When he's saying things like, my hands are shaking because I knew the others weren't the one. I want this to work, Barbara. You know, everything that he was talking about with her like that, how he was getting creepily close, and she's, Jim will find me, and he smacks her, and, you know, that's how I'll get angry. I'm like, okay, we're building up to something really good. I actually wrote this down in my notes. Imagine that. I had notes.
Surprise, surprise.
That, I don't know. Obviously, this was, we had a scene with Jim looking very worried and everything, and Lee is bringing him food and saying, have you slept? Have you eaten? Well, I can't get you to sleep, but here, please eat. And the way they're acting and how concerned he is and all this, I'm like, well, obviously, this is days later. That would be great. Barbara's been missing for days. You've been searching for her for days. There's this big, huge, looming threat because, you know, Harv is saying, well, we haven't found a body, so there's still hope. And I'm thinking, it's been days. You know what it was? It was a procedural. And like I said, I love Castle. I watch the show every week because I love Nathan Fillion and I love his interaction with Stonicotic and I love all the supporting characters. But when somebody is murdered between 7 and 8:30 at night, they find the body the next morning, they have people in there interrogating that afternoon, and by the third day, they've arrested somebody. I'm like, yeah, this is so silly. This is such fiction. This was all the next day. Barbara leaves the event, and the next day, Jim hasn't slept, Jim hasn't eaten, and he's so worried. I'm like, well, okay, so he didn't sleep for one night, he didn't eat for one night, we haven't found Barbara's body yet. None of the other women did you find the body right away, you know, because he kept them and tortured them. I just was like, where is that suspense of time? It just, that I think would have helped. It, you know, it, the whole thing when he gives her the water, you're dehydrated. I'm like, what, she hasn't had anything to drink in 12 hours? So she's super dehydrated. And that's why she grabs this water and drinks it. And the whole time I'm like, I'm waiting for her to smack that glass out of his hand. Because obviously it's drugged. Obviously, don't drink the water. You know, it's like, come on. It's in an open glass. It's not even like you can. Even Abraham on The Walking Dead knocked the water out of Eugene's mouth that was left for them by a friend. They really were dehydrated. They have been going for days with nothing but like dew drops. Really? We've got 12 hours. That's how long she's been gone. She's not an official missing person. It just had no suspense for me once I saw this. It was just stupid.
I think I would be more okay with the way it played out if, like you said, it's been days. And we didn't cut to the morning after when she, you know, decides to, okay, we've had fun, let's never do it again. And him stopping her, if they cut to her already, you know, gagged and in chains, then I could believe that it's been days and he had the time to brainwash her. I refuse to believe that the character with such potential would turn into this vacant looking blonde who does everything the cycle tells her to. I simply refuse to believe that. And yeah, when I saw her vacant look, the vacant stare at her parents' house, and after Jason was killed, I was like, what is going on? I am not okay with that. I thought I would not be okay with, you know, Jason torturing her, because, come on, being redundant, let's not do the cliché stuff. But what actually bothered me more is how they cut corners on that storyline. Because that's what it felt like. Yeah, let's not get into the whole torture stuff, that's unpleasant. Let's not do this, let's just go straight through to her being already broken.
I mean, yeah, she has that, she drinks the water, she falls down convulsing, she wakes up and is crying, you're gonna kill me, do you want me to? No. Well, then tell me who I should kill. This whole story arc, and I'm gonna go back to that first episode when we were talking about the flashbacks, and you were initially okay with the flashbacks, and then I wasn't, and then you weren't once you found out I wasn't. And we both mutually ranted. If they had started Milo's storyline way back, say when they're showing that little mid-season, like you were saying, that mid-season quick thing of Barbara going to her parents' house, if they had started some of Milo's things back then, don't even have to film more with Milo, but start it back then so it is this arc that's over the entire second half of the season. And built to this, and the charity ball or something was earlier so that Barbara could be gone long. I don't buy a drug-induced Stockholm syndrome type thing in a matter of hours. Yeah. I don't buy it. And it cheapens Barbara's character so much. She was literally brought back for this story, because the thing I think that really gets me just as much, I'm really bothered by that vacant stare, and Jim, just leave us alone, we're, you know, we're together, as she's standing there bloodied with her parents' blood, vacant blood. I don't care if she doesn't like her parents, she's now complicit in murder, whether he did it or she helped or however it happened, she's complicit in her parents' murder. Okay, let's damage her even more now than she already was. But to then have all of that and Jim going after her and have that scene at the end of the Jim story where he says, I love you, not her, I'd still protect you first. It's like, okay, I've saved you, Barbara. I don't care anymore. I don't care that you have this vacant stare after your parents were killed in front of your eyes, after you were tortured by the ogre and done. It's like, okay, I saved your life. Don't care anymore. What the hell is Barbara doing in this story?
Yeah.
What the hell is she doing there?
Yeah, that's pretty much sums up my feelings about the whole thing. And I honestly thought last week when we were gearing up to, you know, Jason as Barbara, oh my goodness, enthusiasm and all that, that you can still hear in my voice right now. Mm-hmm. I thought that I would not be okay with this episode being all about the torture and the mental, you know, trauma that Barbara was no doubt about to experience. What we got instead, just, I don't even have words for it. I honestly yeah. don't have the words for it. And if I could translate what I want to translate from image to sound, you would be able to hear my vacant stare as I look for words.
You know what it would sound like to, for me? It would sound like when in Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire, he first opens the egg, but not underwater.
And,
there's that screaming,
yeah.
that screeching that everybody, that's what it sounds like to me, because you have at the beginning, when Harv Bullock brings in that snitch, and the snitch is saying, well, what is she worth? And you have Jim going, Harv, I'm about to violate department policy. I loved Harvey. Going, you know, I think there's a donut with my name on it, because Jim is crossing that line. Barbara is in danger, and I'm going to get it out of this guy. To the end, him not caring. I mean, what happened to that guy that was going through the whole thing, that went to that Foxglove Club, whatever, and saw Sally, his first almost victim, that mm-hmm. has to have this Phantom of the Opera mask because she's scarred for life, gets him all this information that he needs. I mean, how many police officers out there in the world would love to have all this information just fall at your feet of where this guy lives and what's going on and everything that's happening? I mean, the way the clues just clicked into place.
Yeah.
He had more concern for all of that and until, bang, Milo is suddenly dead. Again, just like Gruber, just like Dr. Crane, this tense storyline just ends in a split second. It's like, really? That's all we get? And now Jim is, yeah, whatever, Barb. I'm going to be over here with Lee having a good time. You're on your own, even though, you know, you're super damaged and drugged yeah. and brainwashed.
Basically, instead of a bang, we got a whimper.
After screeching. After
yeah,
much
screeching. Basically.
Much, much screeching. I am just really disappointed in... Because I'm looking at how Erin Richards is doing what she's given.
Hmm.
And I see that she is really trying with what she's given to bring out her acting chops. I mean, I can see things in her eyes, these little quivers, this look. I mean, I can see she's really trying. She's just not given anything, I think, really worth it to even wonder. Should she, it's like, Barbara's supposed to be this big character in canon. I don't think she should be back next season.
Yeah, that will be a small mercy. Just retcon this character, give us a season of relief, and then reinvent her, bring her back for something and actually, you know, important, interesting, and with some, you know, something, anything. I'll settle
some respect anything. Too.
Yeah, no, she's really, really in need of that.
It's one thing when the character doesn't have respect for themselves because of everything they've gone through and they feel beaten and worthless, when the character itself would feel that way. But I really feel like the writers don't respect her.
Yeah.
And that bothers me. When somebody that is playing it as well as she can and has the potential they just don't respect her. And they're just plugging her in where, okay, we need somebody to interact with Kat. So let's put Kat in, an adult to interact with Kat. We'll put Kat in Barbara's apartment, and her and Barbara can have this relationship. Okay, we need somebody to be in peril that Jim will care enough about to actually do something and to break, you know, violate department policy. Oh, we'll do Barbara. But now we want him still with Lee, so we'll just ditch Barbara. It's respect. You need to respect your characters.
Take a deep breath.
Okay, let's move on.
Let's move on. Yeah.
Somebody that we love, who is the first part that we see of the last part of this episode, is Butch. We see Butch. And Butch is setting up the Penguin story. And I wanted to start the episode talking about Bruce because I like Bruce, and Bruce was learning the facts of life, and I loved their storyline.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to end with Penguin because we always talk about how he takes a step forward and then two steps back. I think he actually made steps forward and planted himself. And I don't know if it's just because of the disappointment I had in the Barbara Jim Ogre storyline, but I found him refreshing and what I expect his character to be, and even utilizing Butch the way he did so that Butch could go set up that bar for the massacre and not keeping Butch even in the loop, because, you know, he knew it wasn't the right thing. He didn't want anything to get out. He didn't want anything to fail. I actually liked, I hate saying that word on this, this storyline. And how Penguin is, you think he's setting it up for a massacre to kill Maroney, but he's not. He's setting up something that will put him on top. What did you think of the Penguin, Butch, Maroney, Falcone? Well, Falcone's breaking apart.
I know. It's an epic breakup. I don't know how we'll handle it. But honestly, any plotline that puts Maroney in peril is not a plotline that I will approve of. Let's get this disclaimer out before anything else. Because I fell in love with the guy completely when they introduced him. Because he was awesome, and the actor is awesome, and he's such a great counterpart to Falcone. Come on, let's face it. Penguin has more black marks in his column than anything else, so Penguin is not awesome enough to just murder Maroney like that. The way they set it up, I was fully expecting that, A, I would be either terribly disappointed because Penguin's plot succeeds, or B, I would be terribly disappointing because Penguin once again would be taking two steps back.
Mm-hmm.
So either way, I was set to be disappointed. And then, suddenly, I was not disappointed. And it shows how terribly disappointing this season is. That I was surprised not to be disappointed. The bar was really low and it was not met. I was interested in...
I love that you're disappointed for not being disappointed.
I know. I know. I don't know what to do with myself. But when the plan seemingly, you know, quote-unquote failed, I was... It was only then I realized, oh no, that is not a sign from God, darling. That is something pre-planned. And oh my God, what is he up to now? Is it possible that Penguin is earning his V back?
That's a good point, because in my notes, again, those infamous notes, I wrote down first, Pengy planted the jammed guns or guns with blanks. And then I scratched out and put Butch planted them. And then I had to scratch out Butch again. I'm like, no, it was Penguin that planted. And he took the firing pins out to totally set this up. And made sure that the Irish guy, you know, set, gave the message so that Maroney knew who it was coming from. I was impressed because I wasn't anticipating that. You know, last week I was saying, please don't get rid of our mobs because I'm not ready for this to all be super crime, super villain crime.
Yeah.
He turned Falcone on itself. This is like Bennifer, Ben Affleck and Jennifer Lopez when they broke up. It's that kind of a thing. This is like turning on each other. I'm very impressed. And when Essen at the end, she didn't have much in this episode, but I love the look on her face. I love how she said it when she comes out and says, we're in a shooting war. And you just see that Maroney's men are like, screw this. We're taking them out. We're going for Falcone full blast. And Falcone is seeing that tomato paste box with the head of the Irish guy in there. And you know what this means. And Penguin laughs. I'm like, you're right. I think, I'll hold reserve judgment, but if he can just hold it for one more episode, I will give him his the back. Not yet, but it is out of the box and being dusted off, because that kind of writing is what they need to do for Barbara and for Montoya and for all these other characters that they are totally neglecting who generally seem to be women. That's the kind of writing, because I didn't expect that.
And to be perfectly honest, those final shots, you know, that left a lot in the air, they were so intense and well done. I honestly could buy this as season finale, like you said at the very beginning. It's I'm conflicted once again, because when am I not with this show? On one hand,
you're not kidding.
The ending is thrilling. It really is. And, you know, I'm looking forward to how they're going to resolve it. But at the same time, I dread the next episode, which is supposed to be season finale, because the pattern so far with this show has been, oh my god, I'll get excited, and then look what happens. It's going to be anticlimactic, or poorly paced, or anything. Just everything's going to be wrong with the following episode, because that's how they roll, apparently. So, for this pattern to hold when it's season finale next week, I don't even...
I am definitely scared, because I don't like what they've done with some of the characters. I like where they've taken Bruce. I like where they've positioned Penguin. And I don't want to say I like, but I'm interested that Jim is not still so goody-two-shoes and is doing some compromising. So I'm kind of trepidatious, because if we had just ended with, we are now in a shooting war, that I think would have been enough for me to end the season and come back on something else. So I don't know what they're going to do with this finale. And let's go ahead and just quickly mention that. Next week is the finale called All Happy Families Are Alike. And the synopsis says, so spoiler alert if you want to be completely spoiler free, as Gotham City's gang war reaches its boiling point, Fish Mooney goes head-to-head with Maroney and Penguin in an attempt to restake her claim on the city. Meanwhile, Barbara and Leslie Tompkins are brought together after recent events, and Bruce searches Wayne Manor for any hints that his father might have left behind. Okay, so I want to take this step by step. So first we have the gang war is reaching a boiling point. Okay, we just had the gang war. Why are we already at a boiling point?
Yeah.
Fish Mooney going head-to-head with Maroney and Penguin. Well, since we've already had the announcement Jade is not coming back, kind of know
spoiler,
how that's probably going to end.
We know how it ends, yeah.
Spoiler. Yeah, or at least have some kind of inclination of it, unless she gets trapped by the dollmaker again and he decides to keep her brain but give her a totally different face.
Yeah.
Let's just say,
we will be surprised if she actually wins.
Yeah, exactly. So we have Barbara and Leslie coming together after recent events. That's either, are they going to become buddy-buddy? Is Leslie going to be helping her through everything that happens? Is Leslie going to be there for Barbara when Jim isn't? Is it going to be catfight? I don't know if I care.
Yeah.
Please, you have a scene here. I mean, obviously, we have some redemption. Come on, writers. Do something good with the female characters in the last episode, please. And then we have Bruce searching Wayne Manor for hints that his father might have left behind, a.k.a. I guess we're going to see the makings of the Batcave coming.
And once again, little Batman is exciting, you know. Who possible Batcave?
I wonder if he finds the bat pole and just slides down it. Sorry, going back into the TV show. I don't know. I just really don't know what I think, what I feel. The finale better be damn good for me to care. And then the summer better be really long to help me forget some of the things I really don't like. But that's for another episode.
Well, let's just say the spoilers they release regarding season 2 are going to be crucial for me to come back or not. Because if the spoilers sound interesting, like what they did before season 1, then okay, I'll be watching. But if not, then...
This is coming from a woman who has, oh my goodness, given up on Game of Thrones, and it kills me every time she says that.
Yeah, sorry. But once I give up on a show, I give up on a show. That's it.
Well, two shows we have not given up on are iZombie and Orphan Black, so do make sure to subscribe to us so that you can catch those podcasts. We've got those going through early and then mid-June. Those are two fun shows to definitely watch and help us restore our faith in people that can write for female characters. We'll stop talking about writing for female characters when the writing for female characters becomes as good as the writing is for male characters consistently.
Yeah.
And it just becomes writing about characters. So just so you know, this is Sci-Fi for Chicks, so you know, we are skewed a little bit more towards how the women are being treated and portrayed. We'd love to know what you thought of this episode. I'd actually really love to know what people think of Gotham, because every time I see stuff on Gotham, like if you go to the wiki page, which I know is not like the end-all be-all, but it's saying that on Rotten Tomatoes, it's giving the first season a rating of 90% with an average of 7.3 out of 10. That its high production values, talented cast, and appealing stylized approach help give Gotham overcome its occasionally familiar themes, and I would say sloppy, lazy writing, especially for females. So I don't know how it gets 90% or 7.3 out of 10.
Honestly? The 90s?
Yeah. That's what Rotten Tomatoes
I don't understand how Rotten Tomatoes work if they are willing to give Gotham such a high rating.
Well, it's the reviews. It's based on 86 reviews. We get a 90%. So we'd love to hear what you think. You can email us, scififorchicks@scififorme.com. And of course, the hotline, 573-427-2434. That's 573-42-SCIFI. Also go over to scififorme.com and check out Jason's recaps of the episodes and see if somebody who knows all there is to know about the DC universe. Trust me, I don't even talk to him about DC and Marvel universes anymore because... I my eyes glaze over as I'm like, I have no idea what you're talking about. You're going so far back in history, and I just don't know. He knows what he's talking about, so see what he thinks about it over on scififorme.com. Alex, one more episode.
Oh, joy.
I thought that would have made you happy. All happy families are alike. We will see you next week for that. We actually came in on time. Woohoo!
And you can hear how we sound when we are enthusiastic on iZombie and Orphan Black.
Well, when we're not tired. Last Orphan Black when I was really tired. We will see you next week for the finale of Gotham, and we are keeping our fingers crossed that Penguin will earn his V and that Butch will be back, and we will love him. And he will be at the Dallas Comic Con at the end of May. So So I might have to go see
you. You will go and hug him for me. Because I can't.
I'll give him one hug for me and one hug from you, and then he'll call security. And I will be banned from Dallas Comic Con.
And we will crowdsource to, you know, find your baby money.
There you go. Thank you so much for listening to us. We'll see you next week. Thanks, Alex.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
See you next week. Same bat time, same bat station.
This has been a presentation of SciFiForMe.com. Copyright 2015 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. This is Sci-Fi For Me Radio.